From A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life by Shantideva. Chapter 7. Enthusiasm. Having patience, I should develop enthusiasm, for awakening will dwell only in those who exert themselves. Just as there is no movement without wind, so merit does not occur without enthusiasm. What is enthusiasm? It is finding joy in what is wholesome. Its opposing factors are explained as laziness, attraction to what is bad, and despising oneself out of despondency. Because of attachment to the pleasurable taste of idleness, because of craving for sleep, and because of having no disillusion with the misery of cyclic existence, laziness grows very strong. Enmeshed in the snare of disturbing conceptions, I have entered the snare of birth. Why am I not aware that I live in the mouth of the Lord of Death? Do I not see that he is systematically slaughtering my species? Whoever remains soundly asleep surely behaves like a buffalo with a butcher. When, having blocked off every escape route, the Lord of Death is looking for someone to kill, how can I enjoy eating, and likewise, how can I enjoy sleep? For as long as death is actually approaching, then I shall accumulate merits. Even if I then put a stop to laziness, what will be the use? That is not the time. When this has not been done, when this is being done, and when this is only half finished, suddenly the Lord of Death will come, and the thought will occur, "Oh no, I am done for." Their faces flowing with tears, their eyes red and swollen with sorrow, my relatives will finally lose hope, and I shall behold the vision of the messengers of death. Tormented by the memory of my evils and hearing the sounds of hell, in terror I shall clothe my body in excrement. What virtue can I do in such a delirious state? If even in this life I shall be gripped with fear, like that of a live fish being rolled in hot sand, why mention the unbearable agonies of hell that will result from my unwholesome deeds? How can I remain at ease like this when I have committed the actions that will bear fruit in my delicate infant's body encountering boiling acids in the hell of tremendous heat? Much harm befalls those with little forbearance and those who want results without making any effort. While clasped by death, they shall cry like the gods, "Oh no, I am overcome by misery." Relying upon the boat of a human body, free yourself from the great river of pain. As it is hard to find this boat again, this is no time for sleep, you fool. Having rejected the supreme joy of the sacred Dharma, this is a boundless source of delight. Why am I distracted by the causes of pain? Why do I enjoy frivolous amusements and the like? Without indulging in despondency, I should gather the supports for enthusiasm and earnestly take control of myself. Then, by seeing the equality between self and others, I should practice exchanging self for others. I should never indulge in despondency by entertaining such thoughts as, "How shall I ever awaken?" For the Tathagatas who speak what is true have uttered this truth. If they develop the strength of their exertion, even those who are flies, mosquitoes, bees, and insects will win the unsurpassable awakening, which is so hard to find. So, if I do not forsake the Bodhisattva's way of life, why should someone like myself, who has been born in the human race, not attain awakening, since I am able to recognize what is beneficial and what is of harm? But, nevertheless, it frightens me to think that I may have to give away my arms and legs without discriminating between what is heavy and what is light. I am reduced to fear through confusion. For over countless myriads of eons, I have been cut, stabbed, burned, and flayed alive innumerable times, but I have not awakened. Yet the suffering involved in my awakening will have a limit. It is like the suffering of having an incision made in order to remove and destroy greater pain. Even doctors eliminate illness with unpleasant medical treatments. So, in order to overcome manifold sufferings, I should be able to put up with some discomfort. But the Supreme Physician does not employ common medical treatments such as these. With an extremely gentle technique, he remedies all the greatest ills. At the beginning, the guide of the world encourages the giving of such things as food. Later, when accustomed to this, one may progressively start to give away even one's flesh. At such a time when my mind is developed to the point of regarding my body like food, then what hardship would there be when it came to giving away my flesh? Having forsaken all evil, there would be no suffering, and, due to wisdom, there would be no lack of joy. But now my mind is afflicted by mistaken conceptions, and my body is caused harm by unwholesome deeds. As their bodies are happy due to their merits, and their minds are happy due to their wisdom, if even they remained in cyclic existence for the sake of others, why would the compassionate ones ever be upset? Due to the strength of his awakening mind, the Bodhisattva consumes his previous evils and harvests oceans of merit. Hence, he is said to excel the Shravakas. So, having mounted on the horse of an awakening mind that dispels all discouragement and weariness, who, when they know of this mind that proceeds from joy to joy, would ever lapse into despondency? The supports, when working for the sake of living beings, are aspiration, steadfastness, joy, and rest. Aspiration is developed through fear of misery and by contemplating the benefits of aspiration itself. Thus, in order to increase my enthusiasm, I should strive to abandon its opposing forces, to amass the supports of aspiration, self-confidence, joy, and rest, to practice in earnest, and to become strong in self-control. I shall have to overcome the boundless faults of myself and others, and, in order to destroy each of these faults alone, I may have to strive until an ocean of eons is exhausted. But if within myself I do not perceive even a fraction of the perseverance required to exhaust these faults, then why do I not have a heart attack? For now I have become an abode for infinite misery. Likewise, I shall have to realize many excellent qualities for myself and others, and in order to attain each of these qualities alone, I may have to acquaint myself with its cause until an ocean of eons is exhausted. But I have never developed acquaintance with even a fraction of these excellences. How strange it is to squander this birth I have found by some coincidence. I have not made offerings to the Lord Buddhas. I have not given the pleasure of great festivals. I have not performed actions for the teachings. I have not fulfilled the wishes of the poor. I have not granted fearlessness to the frightened, and I have not given happiness to the weak. All I have given rise to is the agonies in the mother's womb and to suffering. Both now and in previous lives, such deprivation has arisen because of my lack of aspiring for the Dharma. Who would ever reject this aspiring for Dharma? The Mighty One himself has said that aspiration is the root of every facet of virtue. Its root is constant acquaintance with the ripening effects of actions. Physical pain, mental unhappiness, all the various kinds of fear, as well as separation from what is desired, all arise from an unwholesome way of life. However, by committing wholesome actions, which are motivated by aspiration in the mind, wherever I go, I shall be presented with tokens of the fruit of that merit. But by committing evil actions, although I may wish for happiness, wherever I go, I shall be completely overcome by the weapons of pain caused by my evil life. As a result of virtue, I shall dwell in the spacious, fragrant, and cool heart of a lotus flower. My radiance will be nourished by the food of the conqueror's sweet speech. My glorious form will spring from a lotus unfolded by the Mighty One's light. And as a bodhisattva, I shall abide in the presence of the conquerors. But as a result of my non-virtue, my skin will be ripped off by the henchmen of Yama. In this feeble state, liquid copper, melted by tremendous heat, we poured onto my body. Pierced by flaming swords and daggers, my flesh will be cut into 100 pieces, and I shall tremble upon fiercely blazing iron ground. Therefore, I should aspire for virtue, and with great respect acquaint myself with it. Having undertaken the wholesome in the manner of Vajradhara, I should then proceed to acquaint myself with self-confidence. First of all, I should examine well what is to be done to see whether I can pursue it or cannot undertake it. If I am unable, it is best to leave it, but once I have started, I must not withdraw. If I do, then this habit will continue in other lives, and evil and misery will increase. Also, other actions done at the time of its fruition will be weak and will not be accomplished. Self-confidence should be applied to wholesome actions, the overcoming of disturbing conceptions, and my ability to do this. Thinking, I alone shall do it, is the self-confidence of action. Powerless, their minds disturbed, people in this world are unable to benefit themselves. Therefore, I shall do it for them, since unlike me, these beings are incapable. Even if others are doing inferior tasks, why should I sit here doing nothing? I do not do those tasks because of self-importance. It would be best for me to have no such pride. When crows encounter a dying snake, they will act as though they were eagles. Likewise, if my self-confidence is weak, I shall be injured by the slightest downfall. How can those who, out of faint-heartedness, have given up trying, find liberation because of this deficiency? But even the greatest obstacle will find it hard to overcome. Therefore, with a steady mind, I shall overcome all falls. For if I am defeated by a fall, my wish to vanquish the three realms will become a joke. I will conquer everything, and nothing at all shall conquer me. I, a son of the lion-like conqueror, should remain self-confident in this way. Whoever has self-importance is destroyed by it. He is disturbed and has no self-confidence. For those with self-confidence do not succumb to the power of the enemy, whereas the former are under the sway of the enemy of self-importance. Inflated by the disturbing conception of my self-importance, I shall be led by it to the lower realms. It destroys the joyous festival of being human. I shall become a slave, eating the food of others, stupid, ugly, feeble, and everywhere disrespected. Tough people, bloated by conceit, are also counted among the self-important. Tell me, what is more pathetic than this? Whoever seizes self-confidence in order to conquer the enemy of self-importance, he is the self-confident one, the victorious hero. And in addition, whoever definitely conquers the spread of this enemy, self-importance, completely wins the fruit of a conqueror, fulfilling the wishes of the world. If I find myself amidst a crowd of disturbing conceptions, I shall endure them in 1,000 ways, like a lion amongst foxes. I will not be affected by this disturbing host. Just as men will guard their eyes when great danger and turmoil occur, likewise I shall never be swayed by the disturbances within my mind, even at times of great strife. It would be better for me to be burned, to have my head cut off and to be killed, rather than ever bowing down to those ever-present disturbing conceptions. So, likewise, in all situations, I should do nothing other than what is fit. Just like those who yearn for the fruits of play, a bodhisattva is attracted to whatever task he may do. He never has enough. It only brings him joy. Although people work in order to be happy, it is uncertain whether or not they will find it. But how can those whose work itself is joy find happiness unless they do it? If I feel that I never have enough sensual objects, which are like honey smeared upon a razor's edge, then why should I ever feel that I have enough merit which ripens in happiness and peace? Thus, in order to complete this task, I shall venture into it, just as an elephant, tormented by the midday sun, plunges into a cool, refreshing lake. When my strength declines, I should leave whatever I am doing in order to be able to continue with it later. Having done something well, I should put it aside with the wish to accomplish what will follow. Just as an old warrior approaches the swords of an enemy upon the battlefront, so shall I avoid the weapons of the disturbing conceptions and skillfully bind this enemy. If someone dropped his sword during a battle, he would immediately pick it up out of fear. Likewise, if I lose the weapon of mindfulness, I should quickly retrieve it, being afraid of hell. Just as poison spreads throughout the body in dependence upon the circulation of blood, likewise, if a disturbing conception finds an opportunity, unwholesomeness will permeate my mind. Those who practice should be as attentive as a frightened man carrying a jar full of mustard oil, who is being threatened by someone with a sword that he will be killed if he spills just one drop. Just as I would swiftly stand up if a snake came into my lap, likewise, if any sleep or laziness occur, I shall quickly turn them back. Each time something unwholesome occurs, I should criticize myself and then contemplate for a long time that I shall never let this happen again. Likewise, in all these situations, I shall acquaint myself with mindfulness. With this motivation as a cause, I shall aspire to meet with teachers or accomplish the tasks they assign me. In order to have the strength for everything, I should recall before undertaking any action the advice in the chapter on conscientiousness, and then joyfully rise to the task. Just as the wind blowing back and forth controls the movement of a piece of cotton, so shall I be controlled by joy, and in this way accomplish everything.